history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories that need to be preserved. Sometimes we just need to take the time to ask a few questions and listen and then be amazed. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, boy, do we learn a lot. We are educated, we're entertained, and oftentimes inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And they sure know how to celebrate our greatest generation here in Coronado, California, where Hometown Heroes is a lot more than a radio program. They honor their hometown heroes on banners down the main drag of this beautiful island, the Avenue of Heroes. And if you were looking last year, and if you pull up to his house now, you'd see a smiling face of a young Navy pilot named Nate Murphy, almost 99 years old, 98 for now. But we're going to go back to his childhood in Boston, Massachusetts. And Nate, you've got an older brother, and you still have an older brother. I don't know if I've met anyone who's 98 years old who still has an older sibling.
2 years older than me.
And it's amazing. Here, the two of you are still going strong, yet you lost both of your parents as a child. Your father was run over by a train?
Well, yeah, he worked for the railroad, and it was winter time, and he was cleaning the switches, taking the ice out of the switches. And the guy, he was playing with another guy, and the guy gave him signal to back up, and it backed over him, wiped out, I guess, was the right side. The only thing I can remember about my father is I can still remember him being in a casket. So never had any real association. If anything I wanted or anything, I went to my brother. And then the first thing he'd do would beat the hell out of me, and then he'd go do it.
So that's your secret. All those beatings you took from your brother toughened you up, huh?
Yeah, I think they helped.
And then you lost your mother just a few years after that.
Yeah, I used to deliver the menus between the restaurant, Thompson's Spa, four of them in Boston. I think after about a year, I decided I needed to do something else. So I went down to the Air Force recruiter. I made an application to him. They said, no, you know, you got to have 2 years or better of college before we'll even consider you. Now, this was before the war started, of course.
Right.
So I said, okay. And so I went to Northeastern University, and they put me in a program where I would study for 6 months, and then I would work for 6 months. And this went on for 2 years until I finally got my number required. And I figured, doggone it, maybe they'll let me in. So I went around. They said no still. So then I went to the Navy, and they said, we'll take you. But if you don't pass, you don't go back to them. You go into the regular Navy and become a seaman second. Now I had a private pilot's license. Right. So, and they would let me get into that aerobatics. So I went up to Waterville, Maine. There was only about six or seven qualified guys at that time that they would let come in. And so I got into that.
What kind of planes were those you were flying?
N2S, N3N. Those were what took us all the way now down to Miami. And in Miami, you get to fly fighters, dive bombers. At that time, they had just relieved the fleet. They got F2Fs in the fleet. And so these planes were given to Miami. So now when you walked in the base and you walked up to the administration building, the runway was on the left and your planes would taxi on down and take off. And so I didn't have an automobile, so I was walking up carrying my suitcase watching these guys. And that was the first time I had seen anything like that. And this was fleet aircraft. They just taken them out of the fleet. That felt pretty damn good. And then I got my orders to Scouting 71 on the WASP.
The USS Wasp, the ill-fated USS Wasp.
Yeah.
I've got a question for you before we get into all that. Where were you on December 7th, 1941?
I was at Norfolk, Virginia. The ship was in Bermuda operating anti-airplanes. And so I was waiting in Norfolk for her to come back so that I could join it. Join in my squadron. We had an interesting experience there. One of the planes that they were making available for us to fly was a plane that was built by the Naval Aircraft Factory. It was one of the planes that they would give you time in. We were out one day checking things, and I was in the back seat, and we had a Lieutenant J.G. in the front seat. So consequently, he was fairly high-powered, and you know, you went along with him and kept your mouth shut and hoped you got through this thing. But anyway, just about the end of the period, he said, okay, let's shoot a couple of landings. And here's this little field down there. It looked like a postage stamp. And he said, okay. And so he readies himself for a landing. This airplane was sort of a one of a kind. It had a throttle that was very loose on the throttle. And when you wanted to come in to land or anything, if you just came back on it like that, the engine would go to idle, but not all the way to idle. So what would happen, of course, you'd come down and you'd want to land and you'd float a little. But up to that time, everybody could handle it well because they landed on the larger strips. But this day, he decided that he wanted to show me that he could land on one that small. And he pulled the throttle back, and I thought, well, when's he going to snap it? The engine was sitting there floating and going around. And he never did. So the thing hit on the runway. It was a dirt runway. And he pulled it back, and it didn't come back. He just kept pulling back, and he came down to the end of the runway, across the road, between two telephone poles, and coming right up on, looked like a chicken coop. He jammed, and I jammed on the foot brake. Well, of course, the thing hit in soft dirt. She comes up on her nose. Over she goes. My seat belt broke and hit me right and knocked me out for a very, very short time. That was it. And a lady came busting out of the house, and she said, will you please be careful? My husband works nights. So,
well, with that story that you just told me, your career was almost over before it began.
It could have been, but I'll tell you. But after that, whenever I flew that airplane, I made sure that I could snap it back and make it stop.
Do you remember December 7th and how you found out what happened at Pearl?
Somebody yelled, we've been attacked. So immediately, whoever is in charge put a stop on, you can't go out, you can't come in. They just went ape. And they started closing down this like they wanted to have sentries, but they didn't have any guns because the guy with the key to the arsenal, he had them home with him. That was one of the idiotic things. And the other things, like you couldn't leave such an area because that was under guard, and it wasn't under guard, but it was just a mess. So the ship came in during all this, took on all of us aviators, and out she goes again. So that was fine. So then we went out, and for about a week we were doing, I'll tell you that story too. Well, we went out on anti-submarine, but we weren't qualified, so we just had to watch the big fellas doing it. But when we came in, they wouldn't let us get off the ship because the base was all marked down. What's it?
It was locked down.
Yeah,
on high alert.
Yeah. Consequently, we went out again, and that time we had to get at least 5 carrier landings before we could be used. So that's what the next thing to worry about. Oh, had a funny one. Not funny, tragic, actually. The carrier loaded us. We had our own airplanes on the beach now waiting, and so they hoisted them aboard. They didn't land them. They hoisted them aboard and shoved off. So when we went out of the harbor that afternoon, we put three planes up on anti-submarine to protect the carrier going out, which they did.
Flying over the carrier.
Yeah.
Looking for submarines that might threaten the Wasp.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And so they sent out a Charlie to these 3 airplanes. Charlie, in those days, went land aboard, clear. They gave him a Charlie, and they came down and got into the landing pattern. And it was dark now. The lead one, he got aboard. He had no problem getting aboard. Because, see, nobody had any flight time or landings. They were all day qualified.
But not at night.
But not at night.
Okay.
And consequently, now that the ship was in combat, they had to use them. So the first guy got aboard. The second guy did fine and came on down and gave a cut. And he hit in the deck and bounced and went over the side. And they never did recover him. And so while they're all running over, looking down the side, along comes Chuck Mester, who comes around, couldn't see anything, darker than hell. The flag lieutenant, the guy that waved him in,
right,
had no help. So he just came in and timed it and cut the throttle and landed aboard. So, and here I was standing up on the flybridge watching this. So believe me, I was not a carrier pilot at that time. It was all right. We went up to Casco Bay. We operated out of there for, a couple, 3 weeks, and they kept trying to get us qualified. And every time we'd get ready to go, weather would be bad or it's going to rain. Everything came up was wrong. So in order to get going, they had to hoist our airplanes onto barges.
Right.
And barge them out to the ship. And lift them aboard and shove off they were going to provide cover for a British convoy. They had to get me qualified. That's the name of the game. They thought, well, we'll do it while they're with the British people, while they're giving them protection.
Right.
So it was lousy weather. And it was cold. Oh, it was murder. So they put me in the airplane, and they said, shoot him off. I had all this stuff. I couldn't feel the gloves. I mean, everything was so cold and so bulky. I mean, no, you couldn't feel and get any, you know, you just went, that's all. They said, give us some marine patrol for 3 hours, and then come back aboard, and you'll be qualified. Okay. So come the end of 3 hours, and they gave me a Charlie, and I came on down, and I was the only one in the pattern. I got in the landing pattern, and every time I come around, I would try to sink in with the rear, with the flight deck. We had the LSO, landing signal officer, back there. He would track us around, and he'd get his boat where he wanted us. And then just as we were about to give the cut, the deck would drop out. And all of a sudden, you got nothing. So you'd go on around again with an SP2U. Nobody ever told you anything about them.
Oh, I've heard
about
them.
Don't believe them. But anyway, I think I made about 4 or 5 passes, and the old man said, land him. I didn't hear any of this, of course.
Right.
And I came on around, and everything looked good, and all of a sudden, down goes the gate. And he had already given me a cut power. So I cut the power, and I picked up an attitude. There's the deck, and there's me, and this is, I'm holding what I got. And so I float and float and float. And I mean, it was, I guess they must have floated 100 feet or more. Now it was, he said, okay, let's get back. So the carrier starts turning to get back into position so the destroyers could protect that area. And so he kept doing that, and all of a sudden he hits and stops, and I was that close to hitting it with a propeller.
Your propeller stopped inches away?
About that much. They had to push me back, and there was a 5-inch gun mount here. They had to push me clear of the 5-inch gun mount and push me back and get me back on the flight deck. So anyway, I am now a carrier pilot.
And that's twice before you've even flown a single mission that it almost all came to an end for you. It's break time, but we'll hear the wildest parts of Nate Murphy's story when we come back. Imagine flying back toward your carrier only to find it sinking. That's what happened to the USS Wasp, and Nate will tell us about it when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.